My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. When she entered college, Tammy Simon started asking questions her teachers couldn't answer. Deeper questions about life and meaning and purpose. She eventually found one teacher from Sri Lanka who talked about the world very differently. She eventually dropped out of college and traveled to Sri Lanka to spend more time with that teacher and his family and to begin to create her own path. Returning home about a year later, she was determined to continue to study and explore until one day guidance literally dropped from the ether, disseminate spiritual wisdom. That singular purpose set in motion a quest that led to Boulder, Colorado, and the inadvertent launch of Sounds True, a company that started by producing real-time audio tapes of spiritual conference talks and has grown into the leading multimedia wisdom publishing company in the world. I am honored to have Tammy Simon join me on Destination Unlimited this week and share her path, her discoveries, and her wisdom. Please join me in welcoming to Destination Unlimited, Tammy Simon.
Wonderful to be with you. Thank you.
Tammy, thank you so much for joining us and sharing with our listeners and readers your path and the wisdom garnered through your years of experience. Let's start with your early life and how it led to the founding of Sounds True in 1985.
Sure. Well, it's an interesting winding road, but I began Sounds True as a college dropout. Sometimes I like to say I dropped in a certain way, which is true. I discovered the practice of meditation when I was a sophomore at Swarthmore College, and it was introduced to me by someone who was there for 1 year on a Fulbright scholarship, Professor Gunapala Dharmasiri, a gentleman who came from Sri Lanka. And at the end of my sophomore year, I decided to spend time with him and his wife and three kids and travel to Sri Lanka and then also up into India and Nepal. And that's when I really discovered meditation and committed myself to it as a young person. So there I was, 21 years of age, and I said, universe, use me, please, to bring this type of practice and other contemplative practices to as many people as possible. And as I said, it's a long and winding road, but when I came back from this pilgrimage, I wasn't really suited to get an academic degree. But I still wanted, and I wasn't suited because I wasn't interested in academic learning. I was interested in personal revelation, what we could each discover by turning inward and looking in our own inner mirror to what is true. And what happened was that because I wanted to continue my education, but not in an academic setting, I started interviewing spiritual teachers for Boulder County Public Radio. So this is, 38 years ago, before I think the word podcast was part of the English language. I was hosting an interview show where I was talking to the different spiritual teachers that would come through Boulder, and I was trying to understand what happened to me in the journey that I took through Sri Lanka, India, and Nepal, and the inner journey, more importantly, and how to integrate that experience. And really, that became the root of Sounds True. People requested copies of the program that I hosted. I had a dubbing machine. I made copies for people. And when my father died, when I was just 21, he was 63 years old, I received an inheritance, a small inheritance, it might sound like today, it was $50,000, But with inflation, that would be over $200,000 today. So for me at that age, at that time, it was a lot of money. And one of the people I was interviewing, I said to him, what should I do with this money I just inherited? I'm not sure what to do with it. And I thought he might have some wisdom because he had a sign on his door. Are you ready for this? I kid you not, Victor. It was a yin-yang symbol with a dollar sign through the center. And the words transformational economy written on top. So he knew something about transformational economy. And I said, what should I do with this money I received? And he said, why don't you put it into yourself? So remember, I'm hosting a volunteer radio show. I'm not being paid. At the time, I was working as a waitress to earn money. I'm a college dropout. He says, why don't you put this money into yourself? And I said, well, I don't know what to do with myself. And he looked at me and he said, come back in 3 days. We'll talk about it. I think you know, Tammy, what you want. And when I walked out of his office, and once again, Victor, I kid you not, it was a strange experience. I felt like I was walking slightly above the ground instead of on the ground. And then I heard a voice. Of course, I don't know what this voice was, whether it was some kind of interior knowing or something that was guiding me that was an external voice. To this day, I don't know. It's a mystery. But I did hear these three words, disseminate spiritual wisdom. And that's how Sounds True was born.
Wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. Have you had the voice since that time?
There are some rare occasions where things like that happen to me, where I know that what's occurring is really important. That it's, I mean, of course, you know, I hear things inside my head all the time. I got voices talking and there are all kinds of times. And there's all kinds of like everyday guidance. And like, you know, like most people waking up in the morning and you just know something that you didn't know when you went to sleep, that's the next thing you need to do, a set of operating instructions. But there have been a few times in my life, and this story I'm telling you about walking out of this gentleman's office is one of them, when I felt like I've been given clear divine directive. Like, here you go. It's clear, clear. And I have had that happen a handful of times in my life, but not often. It's rare.
When I attended the new seminary here in New York back in the 90s, one of the teachings that was made very present was this concept of everything unfolding in divine order. Do you sense that happening in your life?
Oh, yeah. Whether I'm attuned to divine order, appreciating divine order or not is often a question mark, but the divine order is definitely there. And there's always an open invitation, I think, for all of us to appreciate it, to see it, to recognize it, to honor it.
Absolutely. In 2016, you edited and published The Self-Acceptance Project, How to Be Kind and Compassionate Toward Yourself in Any Situation. It's a wisdom anthology on the topic with contributions from many wonderful thought leaders. What inspired this work?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks for asking, Victor. So over time, in addition to running Sounds True, I became a meditation teacher. And that's a whole story in and of itself. But as part of being a meditation teacher, I would have one-to-one meetings with meditation students. And we would sit together for 15 minutes, and people could talk about anything they wanted. Sometimes people were silent in these one-to-one meetings. And one of the things I noticed was that one of the greatest sources of pain for people that they would share in these one-to-one meetings was the various ways they were beating up on themselves, the various ways people spoke to themselves, I'll just use it, cruelly, the way you would never speak to even, you know, someone who was you just met, let alone a friend, let alone someone you cared about, let alone someone who was dear to you. And I was like, wow, so people are on the meditation cushion for hours. And what's torturing so many of us is this inner critical voice. We're not good enough in this way. We're not good enough in that way. Our thighs are too big. Our thighs are too small. You know, could be something about our body. It could be something about how much money we have. It could be something about what we have or haven't accomplished. Could be anything. And I thought, this is such a source of pain for people. And I also recognized it in myself as someone who's a high achiever and has a very low tolerance, historically at least, for things not going well that I'm involved in, and how I can turn on myself historically when things don't go well. And I thought, I really want to learn about this. I want to learn, are there skills, are there perspectives such that we can learn to treat ourselves, let's just make decently, let alone kindly and compassionately, can we be decent towards ourselves? And how much suffering that could ameliorate in the world if we could start to become skillful in that way. So I interviewed 30 different people, neuropsychologists, poets, therapists, spiritual teachers, people from many different perspectives, in order to really start to see where there are some important lessons and patterns. And that's what became the Self-Acceptance Project, both this 30-part interview series, and then also the transcripts became the book, The Self-Acceptance Project.
You refer to being kind to ourselves as an advanced practice. Why advanced?
Well, I think it's advanced, I think, because it's hard. It's hard. It's not an easy thing to do. So I think maybe a simpler kind of practice might be, you know, I'm simply going to rest and be present, and I'll be present even with all the ways that I'm cruel to myself. I mean, that's a start. But I think that it's more challenging, so I think that's why I use the word advanced, to really make a strong commitment that when those types of judgments of ourself come up, that we have taken a strong stance that says, I will turn towards myself with the same kind of loving eyes, loving warmth, unconditional embrace that I would turn towards my dearest friend in the whole world, the person I treasure. I'm going to turn towards myself and befriend myself and befriend pain that I might be feeling and anguish. And in Buddhism, there's this teaching that when we're experiencing pain, that's can be called the first arrow. It's an arrow has struck us and we're bleeding in a certain way. It doesn't feel good. It's terrible. But then often what we'll do is we'll take a second arrow and we'll put it into ourselves and say, Andrew shouldn't be feeling that way. You know? So instead of inserting a second arrow, and this is the advanced part, we say, oh, you're suffering right now. All human beings suffer. Let me love you. Let me take care of you. Let me nurture you. Let me hold you. This will pass.
Absolutely. Growing up in the 1950s and 60s, without going into a lot of details, I was wired into the concept that you take care of everyone else, sometimes at the cost of taking care of yourself. And I remember in 1970 hearing the Moody Blues come out with an album called Question of Balance, and in the song Question, Justin Hayward has a lyric that says, when you stop and think about it, you won't believe it's true that all the love you've been giving has all been meant for you. And that turned me around.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful that a song could inspire and stick with you in that way. That's beautiful.
How has the mission of Sounds True changed since its inception? And what are the core values?
Well, our mission to disseminate spiritual wisdom, the original three words that I heard, that's still our mission today. And I would say our mission hasn't changed. It's expanded, it's deepened. There's different language sometimes. What is spiritual wisdom? There's a lot of different perspectives. If it doesn't translate into how we live our life, how we treat our body in terms of our health, how we organize as a society in terms of our respect for all kinds of differences and upholding justice, then in my view, it's not real spiritual wisdom. But that phrase, spiritual wisdom, is open to a lot of different perspectives, levels, interpretation, and we welcome that at Sounds True. So our mission is the same. God knows we've experimented with lots of different formats, sometimes I say by whatever media necessary. So, you know, we started with audio, we moved into books, video, online learning, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So the format keeps changing, but the mission is the same. In terms of our core values, there are several. I think the two that I'll bring forward, Victor, for our conversation, the first is being of service. That's the core of what the company is about, is to serve this spiritual awakening in our time and its expression in the world. And the people that enjoy working at Sounds True, the people that flourish, are the people who have that kind of appetite to be of service. It fills something in their soul. The second core value that I'll just briefly touch on has to do with authentic connection. And that's something that's really important to me, and it's something that pervades the entire way we operate as a company, which means we want to have authentic connection with the authors that we work with when we're putting out their programs. We want to have authentic connection with our customers. So we want to treat each other. That authenticity means that we're telling the truth. We're not wearing a mask at work, pretending to be one thing, but really being something else. We're willing to be vulnerable and share what's really going on with us. And the connection means that we stop and we take time for it. We create a culture of work where how we connect with each other is a value, and connecting with people, and this is a really important idea to me, such that we treat each other as an end in and of ourselves, meaning you are not instrumental because of something I want to get, because of some work outcome I'm trying to achieve, because of some profit goal I have. You're important to me because you're a human. You're who you are. You're this one unique person that I get to interact with, and you get to interact with me. We get to have authentic connection, and people are treated as ends in and of themselves. So that's another core value of how we organize our work.
It's like a word that's used in Southern Africa. The word is Ubuntu, and it basically means I am because we are.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Very beautiful.
How can we embody truth and authenticity and at the same time be compassionate and loving?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't see the dichotomy between those things.
In terms of being brutally honest with someone, lovingly but brutally honest with someone.
Right. Well, the language we use at Sounds True is being kind and direct. Kind and direct. So there's no brutal in that. I originally introduced it as being direct and kind, and people said, Tammy, this is especially good feedback for you. Why don't we reverse them and make it be kind and then direct? And I was like, okay, that's a really important reversal. But I think if we genuinely care about each other because of the word you introduced, Ubuntu, because you are, because I am, if we know that inside of us, first of all, we care about the other person. We want them to flourish. And nothing helps us flourish and our relationships flourish like the truth. It's the most powerful thing you could introduce into any conversation is the truth. And you can say the truth skillfully. You can say the truth with care. You can point to it in a gentle discovery type way, meaning let's look at this together, let's explore this together. So I think it's a skill, and it's a skill we can learn, which is how to be kind and direct. And I think that's what builds trust in relationships.
Absolutely. And I agree with you 100%. And I know that most of our listeners embrace that same concept. But we seem to be living in an era of what I would call truth dualism. How do we go beyond that?
Well, I think one of the keys, first of all, is for each one of us to really want to listen. Not just say like la la la, like to say, I actually really want to understand your perspective. So I think that's a super important starting point, is to genuinely not be so interested in our own position, but wanting to take on other perspectives. So for example, I host a podcast series, it's called Insights at the Edge, and I've been doing this now for, you know, upwards of 10 years. And each time I interview someone, I attempt to take their perspective. I'm not trying to tell them what my perspective is. That's not what my job is. That's not how I personally approach these kinds of conversations. I want to understand their perspective. So instead of having this notion of truth dualism, it's a deep respect for pluralism. And within that pluralism, I can still know what's right for me, what feels right for me, because I'm different. In fact, there's only one of me. So what's right for me is right for me, and no one else can tell me, actually, really, because this is something I need to know from the inside. And I can also respect what's true for you.
Wisdom that our society should definitely embrace. My guest is Tammy Simon. She's the head, the founder of Sounds True. Tammy, please tell our listeners where they can find out more about you and all this wonderful work that you do.
Sure. Come visit us at soundstrue.com. There's lots of free content there, and also access to the thousands of programs that we've created over the last 36 years.
And we'll be back with more of Tammy Simon after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
The best of the holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week is Tammy Simon. Tammy, in the 36 years since the founding of Sounds True, more than 800 spoken word audio and music recordings, books, multimedia learning resources, and online educational programs have been published. Are there any that stand out for you personally?
Oh, my. Victor, you've now asked me an impossible question. Oh my, I don't even know where to start. Most recently, we recorded a series with Carolyn Mace called The Great Transformation, and that was very helpful in terms of understanding this time that we're in and the evolutionary journey from her perspective that we're collectively making, from a species that is shifting from the love of power to the power of love. And that's a shift we're going to have to make in order for us to emerge as an intact human species in the decades to come. So that series was very influential and helpful to me. I just listened to a program that we recorded a couple of years ago, and I had one of those moments where I fell in love with Sounds True all over again. It was so great. I listened to a series by James Hollis, who's an 81-year-old Jungian analyst, and it's called A Life of Meaning. And I absolutely loved his reflections on mortality, on what matters most. He shared his own personal mantra in the series that I like, which is he travels from his apartment in an elevator down to get into his car, and he says this. The first thing this is just James Hollis talking to himself. The first thing he says is, shut up. And when he says that to himself, he says, stop complaining. Just stop complaining. You've got so much going for you in your life, so many opportunities, so many blessings. Shut up. Then the second part of his mantra is, suit up. Like, pull it together. You know, pull yourself together, suit up for the day. You're going to contribute. You're going to be generative. You're going to offer yourself to other people. And then the last part is, show up. So I just love that. Shut up, suit up, show up, from James Hollis. And the whole series is brilliant and beautiful. So that's a recent listen. When I think of like the classics, the programs from Sounds True that have meant the most to me, there's a series by Adyashanti that's called The End of Your World, Uncensored Straight Talk on the Nature of Enlightenment. And I remember listening to that series, and it was one of the first times anyone had ever spoken so clearly about the disappearance of the separate sense of self in the inner landscape and how that changes a person. So anyway, those are some of the ones that come to me top of mind as we're talking.
Did any of your authors surprise you with something they shared, perhaps offline?
Oh my. Well, this may surprise you, but it's true. I am surprised by every single author that we work with. So I interview every author, as I mentioned, on Insights at the Edge. And every single time, I'm surprised by something. And what I mean by surprised is it's something I didn't know. Stunned me. Something I went, whoa, I never knew that. That's amazing. And it happens every time. I mean, there's a gentleman who I interviewed a couple weeks ago. His book is called Tracking Wonder, and he describes how animals experience wonder. And he goes and talks about studies that were done with chimpanzees who would stare and connect with the waterfall and the movement of water through the waterfall. And they were able to identify that the emotion they were experiencing was wonder. So suddenly I started looking at our two dogs at different times and different postures around the house when they'd be looking outside through a window and be, oh my God, I think they're in some kind of wonder-filled state right now. So that's a kind of, it's a sort of normal surprise, if that makes sense to you. It's having an openness to just say, huh, I just learned something I never knew before. That's wonderful. That's surprise filled.
Which points to something that I think we all need to bring into our lives and enhance, and that's the sense of curiosity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we're naturally curious as people. I think we're naturally loving as people. You ready? I'm going to keep going. I think we're naturally brave. I think we're naturally honest. I think we're naturally good. Good. Good in our heart. Good in our soul. Good in who we are. I think that's who we are. Curiosity is part of our essence. I think that it's covered over. All of these qualities can be covered over through whatever our journey in life has brought us. If we were a kid and our curiosity expressed itself, who knows, in ways that were shut down by people in our family or by our educational system. Maybe we expressed our curiosity and it was sexual curiosity. No, not that. Or We expressed our curiosity by asking questions that made other people uncomfortable, and that was shut down. You know, you're to be seen and not heard. Who knows? So it's something that's shut down in us, but it's natural. It's native to who we are. And I think when we can give ourselves permission to just be curious about what we're curious about, you know what I mean? It could be anything. You could be curious about a color. Like, I'm really curious about all the different hues of that color. Or you could be curious about a range of sounds and what a musical instrument could produce through its range. It's just giving ourselves permission to be curious and also to be loving and honest and good and connected, to be who we are.
And I've made it part of my personal practice to try and learn something new every day.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. I notice for me, I don't even focus on like a set of goals or anything like that. It's more for me, and this is just my own personal thing, about letting myself be natural. You know, so letting myself become naturally interested in the fabric on the couch that I'm sitting on and what it feels like when my eyes are shut and I'm touching it and being like, huh, that's so interesting. What is that like? What does that feel like? It's soft. It's like chamois, whatever it might be. It's like letting our natural openness to all of our senses and all of the ways we discover. Because, you know, even this notion of learning something new, it's wonderful. And it's the openness of our learning centers, our brain, and how we function and, you know, read or listen or talk to people. It's great. But our senses are always giving us new, exciting information, smell, touch, everything. And so letting ourselves be supremely sensually connected to our life. It's a form of utter aliveness. And then I think our curiosity comes online naturally.
In addition to the inspiring authors already in the Sounds True catalog, are you looking for new voices?
We always are. We publish 50 books a year, and many of them are first-time authors. And we have a review committee at the company that looks at all of the submissions we receive. And yeah, we're always looking for new voices.
In 2016, you created, voiced, and published the epic Being True, What Matters Most in Work, Life, and Love. What inspired that?
Mm-hmm. Well, remember how I mentioned, Victor, that I was a meditation teacher for a period of
yes.
time? And so when I was teaching, and it was a type of somatic meditation that I was teaching, which means it was an embodied form of using the time we spend meditating to be deeply in touch and attuned to what's happening inside our body in the interior space of the body. So that was the type of meditation I was teaching. And I would give lots of what are known as Dharma talks as part of that teaching. And at a certain point, I realized that I couldn't effectively ride two horses at once. I couldn't try to be the functioning CEO of Sounds True, a company that was starting to really grow and expand, and teach meditation and have meditation students who I then felt an obligation to be available to help them integrate the practices into their life and all the different ways the practices were changing their lives. I couldn't do both. And so when I stopped being a meditation teacher, I had this inspiration to take many of the themes that I had taught in these Dharma talks and put it into a 5-hour teaching series. And that's really what became the basis for the audio program Being True.
And in that recording, you share a quote from Hermann Hesse that you read when you were 16 and had a profound effect on you. Would you share that with us, please?
Yeah. It's the inscription at the beginning of the book, Demian, and Hermann Hesse writes, "I only wanted to live according to the promptings of my true heart. Why was that so very difficult? And I think as a young person who at the time, I knew that I was attracted to people of the same gender, and yet it was something that I didn't feel I could be public about. I also knew that I learned differently than other people, that I was more of an experiential learner than anything else. And there are other ways that I felt like an outsider as a young person. I was asking questions and things were important to me that didn't seem important to other people. And the things that were important to other people weren't important to me. So there I was as an outsider. And I remember reading that quote and thinking to myself, I want to be true to the promptings of my own heart. And this is really difficult. It is really difficult to be different, than feel different than the other people in my family, and then different than the academic framework that I was engaged in, and to be finding my best sense of resonance and connection in books like Demian. And that was a thread, really, being true to the promptings of my heart that has run throughout my whole life. It ran through my life when I left academia and left Swarthmore College, when I claimed being very public as a lesbian and talking about my wife, when I decided to run Sounds True based on multiple bottom lines, and this was back in 1985, when I started thinking about this and writing about it, way before there was any introduction of ideas like people, planet, and profits, or conscious capitalism. There was no articulation, but I knew inside of myself that I was interested in running a business differently. And it didn't matter to me that other people hadn't articulated it. I said, I'm going to be true, there's that phrase again, to what matters to me. And what matters to me is something different. Financial returns are, of course, important, but I have two other bottom lines. One's being true to our mission, and the other is being true to all of the relationships that make up the company, what I sometimes refer to as our relationship bottom line. And I could keep going. I mean, it was a big deal for me to not continue as a meditation teacher after the lineage that I had been a part of had given me that opportunity, an opportunity that is so sacred and is considered such an honor. But I also knew it was something that wasn't, over time, the right fit for me. And it just continues to be this journey in the language of Jungian psychology of individuation, of becoming more and more of a unique individual by being true to what I have to be, even if it goes against convention.
In Being True, you offer five principles for being true. What are those principles and how may we live them?
Sure. Well, when I was thinking, what is the process? What is this process of staying true to my interior guidance? What occurred to me is that the very first step is to recognize that there's only one of each of us. I mentioned this previously, but the reason this is so important, I think, when it comes to being true, is I think that we're often looking for a role model or a recipe of some kind. Could you just tell me how to do it? Victor, can you tell me how to be true? You're asking me, can I tell you? And the answer is no. What I can tell you is that there's only one of you, and you have to be true to that. So that's the starting point. The second point is that we have to be willing to let go of all of our reference points. Sometimes I think about this as going into the darkness. And the reason I call it the darkness is because at the moment there's some sense of light, we can hold on to that as an anchor. We can say, oh, there you go. That's how I'm going to guide myself. But if we allow ourselves to actually drop into that dark, open space where we truly don't know. Utter not knowing. Nothing that you're hanging your hat on, which is what I mean by not having any reference points. If you have a hat, throw it up to the wind and let the wind take it. You're in utter darkness. Okay, so this is, I hope this sounds like an attractive process. You're with me. So there's only one of you. You will let yourself go into absolute infinite darkness, and you're willing to wait. You're willing to wait. And then what I've found in my experience is something emerges, and this is really the third part. Something emerges that feels like, whether you call it a calling, whether you call it an inner directive, an inner knowing, a sense of guidance, a sense of rightness, if you wait long enough, it will come. It will. It may come to you in a dream. It may come to you in a phone call. The outer world may deliver it. It may come to you in an inner sense of, huh, I finally get it. I know it. A book can fall off the shelf and bop you on the head. Who knows? It will come. Which then takes me to the fourth step, which is, when that happens, do you have the courage to listen to it, to follow it, to be true? Do you have that courage? And then the fifth part is to recognize that we're always in this alive dialogue with all of life. We're not separate from it. So the world is always talking to us. It's always giving us feedback. So if we make a couple steps and it's not quite really aligned with the depth and truth of our soul, we'll get feedback. We'll get feedback. We'll get feedback in terms of, once again, a dream or physical ailments that call our attention to pay attention in a different kind of way. We will get feedback. So the fifth part is being attuned to the always offering alive universe that's giving us more and more information about what to do, where to go, and then rinse, repeat, there's only one of you, go back into the darkness.
And as you shared before, we have to listen. Mm-hmm. My guest is Tammy Simon. We'll be back with more of Tammy after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
She Can STEM, a message brought to you by the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week is Tammy Simon. Tammy, a couple of years ago, Sounds True launched a program called the Inner MBA, designed to train business people on, and I quote, inner wisdom skills that lead to outer business success. Some may think of conscious business as an oxymoron, but you advocate that it is possible to make money while making meaning and change. What does this program offer, and how has it been received?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, we have to be able to create businesses that are caring, that are just, that allow us to make money and make meaning for ourselves and for our customers and make change in the world. We have to not allow conscious business to be an oxymoron, as you say. We have to say, guess what? It's hard. It is hard. There's so many factors that need to be taken into account. But this is the future. And actually, I believe that all of our institutions will be remade. They need to be remade. They must be remade. And this is our work as conscious evolutionaries at this time, is to remake the social structures that we're a part of such that they reflect the interdependence, the interconnectivity that we discover when we're quiet, when we go into that darkness, when we listen and look inside, we know you are because I am, and I am because you are. How do we build a business where that, as a principle, is right at the center? That's an aspiring conscious business. And I say aspiring because each one of us is always working, in my opinion, with our unconscious material. We each are. It's a never-ending journey, this is my experience, of becoming more conscious and therefore having our organizational life become more conscious. And it begins with doing some really deep inquiry about how we were formed, what our fears are, what are our beliefs about money and business? What do we think? Do we think that in order to be successful, we have to trade on some of our values, that we have to trade our integrity, that we have to manipulate, that we have to sacrifice what really matters in our heart? Is that a true belief, or is that just something we've taken on? I don't believe it's true. And do I think, though, that we have to be utterly creative? Yes, we do. We can't look at the past, at how business has been done in the past. We have to be the makers of something new in community with other people who share our values. And that's really what the Inner MBA is about. We've now run the program twice. We're getting ready to launch it for a third time. The program has been created in partnership with LinkedIn, which is the leading networking site for business people, along with Wisdom 2.0, which is a company that puts on events online and in person at the intersection of technology, wisdom, and culture change, and a division of NYU called Mindful NYU that grants people a certificate of completion at the end of 9 months. And what we're trying to really help people do in community is look at mindset issues that they have around business, train in core mindfulness skills so that we know not to identify with our thoughts and emotions, instead to use the classical metaphor, to experience ourselves more like an open sky in which clouds come and go, the thoughts and feelings, but we're not so identified with them. We open to the space of what Jack Kornfield, who's one of the presenters in the Inner MBA, calls loving awareness. We train and we start to know ourselves as that loving awareness. And you can imagine how that changes how we conduct ourselves in organizational life when we're not so reactively convinced that our perspective is the way it has to be, where we're letting our emotions be the reactive outplay with other people, but instead we can take some space and let our emotions pass. We train in the Inner MBA in self-compassion, which we've talked about, also so important for high achievers so that we're able to take risks. Now the program, the Inner MBA, it's divided into three trimesters. So in the first trimester, we work on inner transformation. In the second trimester, we're looking at creating exceptional teams, interpersonal transformation. And then finally, in the last trimester, it's about transforming our organizations, the actual structures that we work in. We have a whole, we call them conscious business accelerators, accelerator trainings that run throughout the Inner MBA. And one of them is on how you can transform your company into a B Corp. And that's part of the structural change that businesses are taking on worldwide and need to take on so that we can say, yeah, we're aspiring conscious business people working in aspiring conscious businesses.
I recently read in Inc. magazine that Disney CEO Bob Iger was stepping down, and he was quoted as saying his reason was listening less and maybe with a little less tolerance of other people's opinions. This, to me, is indicative, at a minimum, of emotional intelligence. Can that be taught?
Definitely. I think that's, you know, one of the really interesting things about mindfulness education is that it's a skill. It's a skill that can be taught. You can learn to disidentify with thoughts and emotions. You just need to practice it like any skill. You can learn to be in, as I mentioned before, with somatic meditation, in the knowing, receiving space of your body. And when you're in the knowing, receiving space of your body, first of all, you know what you're feeling. You know when you're feeling sad. And you start to know, huh, what is the message of this sadness right now? The message is that there's something I need to let go of. What is it? You start to able, it's a skill, of course. It's a skill you learn. You know when you're angry. What's your anger telling you? Is there some kind of boundary that's being asked for in this situation? I need to speak to that boundary. It's a type of honorable sentry, says Sounds True author Carla McLaren, who's written several books on the language of emotions and emotions at work. So yes, I think that the skills of emotional intelligence, they're called skills because they are trainable, they're teachable. And it takes a willingness on our part. We have to say, you know, this really matters to me. And you know why it matters to me? Because other people matter to me. I care about them. I care about how my behavior impacts other people. I want to be the type of person who leaves a wake behind me, like a boat leaves a wake. I want to leave a wake of lifting people up, of people being inspired, of people feeling better, of people loving more, of people contributing more, of people feeling like, God, you know, I love when I come into contact with me, with you, that people have this feeling of like, gosh, you know, I just feel a little more awake, a little more appreciative, a little more open, a little more heartful. If you want that genuinely and sincerely, then you commit to learning the skills.
My sense is that you approach your managerial style like an alchemist. Do you see yourself that way?
That's interesting. Tell me a little bit more what you mean by an alchemist. How does an alchemist approach things?
You're drawing the gold out of everything and everyone.
Yeah, I love that, Victor. Thank you for saying that. I've never really thought of that word, but part of what I like about it, too, is there's a mysterious element to it. It makes me think of like some kind of, this is what occurs to me, like there's a big pot that's brewing that has a lot of different ingredients in it. And yes, something will come out that's golden, but it might have to take some time to brew and stew and emerge. And so there's a welcoming of all of those different forces in the creation process.
Since 2000, there's been an emphasis on STEM education, that's science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Some people add an A for arts and make it STEAM, and especially for young women. Would you like to see additional emphasis for young women on business, leadership, and entrepreneurial skills?
Yeah, and I'm going to add a really important part in addition to the skills you described, which I do think are important. Wisdom skills, inner wisdom skills. That's what we all need, men, women, humans. That's what we need. Without that, we won't know how to use all of those other learnings in a way that honors this deep interdependence, interconnection, and the flourishing of all life. We need wisdom most of all. And that's really, I think, the inner MBA is saying, yeah, you have a regular MBA where you learned finance and you learned about innovation teams and entrepreneurship and you learned about cash flow management and et cetera. Wonderful. Add wisdom to that and you're an unstoppable creative force who can help us change the direction of climate change, who can help us heal challenges of social injustice in the workplace. So I would put wisdom at the center. And the skills of wisdom are really, the skill of traditionally the way it's defined in Buddhism is you have to know, first of all, who you are, not as a separate self that is cut out and apart from life, but as the nature, the fabric of life itself, expressing through you in a temporary way. You have to know yourself as an expression of life. And you have to have access to that loving awareness, that compassionate heart. So it's a combination of knowing who you are and having your compassion activated and online in you, both of those qualities.
The wisdom and experience and the path of Tammy Simon. Tammy, one more time, please tell our listeners where they can find out more about you and this wonderful work.
Sure. Come visit us at soundstrue.com. There's lots of free listening, free watching, and we'd love for you to learn more about all the things we're up to. Soundstrue.com.
Tammy, my deep gratitude for you joining us tonight and sharing all of this wonderful wisdom.
Thanks, Victor.
And thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor, the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.